91.7 FM, WNJR, Washington, Pennsylvania, and we're on the line with Chris Caffrey of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Chris, how you doing today? Good to hear from you.
I'm doing great, Greg. How's everything out there?
Everything's wonderful. Chris, I'm going to be talking about Trans-Siberian Orchestra, of course, and the new Winter Tour 2016 getting ready to kick off in a few days here. Tell us what you guys are going to be up to this year.
Well, we're doing the The Ghost of Christmas Eve DVD. It's its 20th anniversary. So we released a new CD, which is currently actually number 2 on the Billboard rock charts, and we're doing the Ghost of Christmas Eve show again for the second time this year, and it's bigger and more spectacular and always. That's something that Paul and Neil make sure every year. It's a crazy task because we keep having to up our own standards, but the show is actually bigger. It's funny because I sit there and I look at the stage when we get into rehearsal, and I'm staring at it going, wow, this is like tremendously bigger than the year before. So it's a great performance, and there's some new songs we've never played, and you know, a lot of stuff that people were asking us to put back in the show is back in. So it's a great show. I think everybody's going to have a great time, and we look forward to Pittsburgh every single year. So
hey, Chris, I can remember back to first seeing Trans-Siberian Orchestra at the Palace Theater in Cleveland, going all the way back to 1999.
Oh, wow.
Very, very, very humble beginnings in a gorgeous area of Cleveland in the theater district there. Those intimate shows were wonderful. And what I liked most about those shows back then were seeing the black t-shirts, Sabotage Cry, mixing in with the theater crowd, and just being stunned by a heavy metal progressive rock band doing Christmas music.
You know what? We still see those Sabotage shirts out there, and the great thing too, not only do we see the people that were wearing the Sabotage shirts in 1999, but we see their kids wearing them now too. So the incredible thing is, it's like through TSO, we've not only been able to you know, spread our legacy and our musical legacy, but we've been able to help really pass on what Chris Oliva and Paul O'Neill and John Oliva did with Sabotage musically to a whole new generation of people. And that's something I'm really proud of, because Chris was a very special talent, and you know, we all still miss him very much to this day. And to see, you know, that white guitar and the roses and to be a part of our legacy and watch the generations of new TSO fans get a chance to experience some of that music and that part of our history is really special to us too.
Yeah, and that's a very powerful visual, as you mentioned, about Chris's guitar and the rose. Just a tremendous, tremendous musician and person who was taken from us far too early in life.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't, you know, I look back to, you know, how old I am now, and I think of, you know, Chris had passed away when he had just barely turned 30, and it's crazy to think what he would have been capable of doing at this moment. It was really a tragedy, and he was a special person, man. I owe, you know, a lot of my career to him. You know, he opened up a spot in his band, him and Paul, they opened a spot for me that made my life and career and everything I wanted to do as a musician happen. So there's not a moment that I don't think about him and thank him when I'm on that stage.
Hey, Chris, you know, you mentioned something else here about kind of the family, and I've seen it passed on in my family now, is to where, you know, my daughters are 9 and 12 years old, and at Christmas time they want to hear the Trans-Siberian Orchestra CDs in the house. My older daughter gets to go to the shows now. I'm going to be hopefully taking the younger one this year for her first one. She's still a little overwhelmed by concerts, but how is that to see? Sometimes you're seeing 3 and 4 generations at your shows in those first few rows, though. It's just got to be a great feeling to know that you're building that kind of a legacy and have built that incredible fan base.
Yeah, no, it's actually really humbling, and it is spectacular to watch. And we always say that, you know, the TSO audience goes from 8 to 80. Now, this is our 20th year. Somebody who was 8 at that time is 28 now, and may, you know, they may have a 10-year-old child or a 5-year-old child that we see in the rows with them, somebody that was a small child, somebody that got, you know, that was the child that received the guitar at the end of the show might actually have a child at the show now. And also on the other end of the spectrum, though, you get really emotional during this show because, you know, somebody who was 80 and came with their family 18 years ago to the first tour may not be with their family this time. And it was a lot of times when I'm on that stage and I watch the tears flowing from people's eyes, and they don't have to let me know why. I know why they're crying. And my father passed away this year, and I know what these people feel, and it's just an incredible gift, I think, that we're able to give to people to be a part of their life, and it's something that we definitely do not ever take for granted. I mean, we know that this band and its music is special to the audience, and we appreciate the fact that everybody makes us a part of their lives every year.
A question going forward with this tour this year. I see the lineup of people that are playing with you again. Russell Allen from Symphony X and Adrenaline Mob. Jeff Scott Soda, who's been with just about everybody. Your Sabotage mates in Jeff Plate and Johnny Lee Middleton. Will the Mind King be joining you guys for any shows at all this year?
You know, John is kind of more, he decided from day one with TSO that he wanted to be the guy behind the scenes, working with Paul and writing the music. And that was a decision he made before we even played the very first show. I mean, he's come up on stage and he performed with us last summer when we did the Wacken Festival in Germany, mm-hmm. where TSO and Sabotage both played, and then we played simultaneously as one giant TSO. That was really the only time that John had performed on stage with TSO. He comes up and, you know, we introduce him at the shows, but he made a decision a long time ago that he was just like, look, I want to be, you know, I was a front man my whole entire life, and he was more comfortable being that guy off the stage with that. But it was really awesome to have him up there and have him, you know, get to be a part of that concert. That was probably one of the greatest concert moments of my life. I mean, we had 80,000 people and two arena stages going at once with nobody had ever done that before, and it was special for me, you know, being a part of Sabotage and working with Paul for 30 years to turn around and look at this monstrosity and this whole entire thing that happened and be like, wow, this is pretty special what was going on at that moment.
Will we ever see, and I'm sure you've been asked this question many times, a reverse of the tours where the West Coast people come and do the East and vice versa?
You know, I can't really say yes or no to that. I mean, we really haven't thought about that as far as, like, doing a complete reversal. I think we're just, you know, that this is such a massive thing to put on the road, you know, and it's not saying it's confusing, but there's so much work to do. And everybody's kind of gotten into their routines with this as far as what we do as a band and the people who we play with. And I think that it would be possible, as it would be possible to even switch up any one musician with a different tour. But for now, it's just like, you know, the formula and the chemistries and everything that's going on and the band with the fans. I think it's working the way it is. And it could, like I said, it could very easily work either way because both bands are both incredible. And we have a lot of cities that kind of meet in the middle. I mean, when we get towards middle America, like Indiana and Illinois and Wisconsin, and even, you know, the state of Florida and Georgia and places like Kentucky and Tennessee and Virginia, West Virginia, there's been times where these shows have swapped. You know, the West Coast band has played Greenville, South Carolina, we played, and you don't skip a beat with it. The audiences come and they love the show. I mean, I just think that we're all so accustomed. It's like I get my itinerary. It's like I'm TSO East. I mean, if it was a turnaround one year and they said West, I would love it. When we did the Beethoven's Last Night tours, we did a few of them in the States, and I got to go to these cities that I never played on the winter tour, and the fans were really happy and to see the people that they didn't get a chance to see. And I think that, you know, that would be exciting, but right now we have our specific cities that we go to, and I think everybody just goes up there and has a good time with it. There's also a lot of people that are on the West band that have been East. There's a lot of people that were on the East band have been West. I mean, it's really no specific East or West. It's one giant TSO, or just kind of where we wind up. It's, once you get on that bus and you're on that tour, I mean, you look at that itinerary, you know what city you're in, but when it all comes down to it, you're up on that stage, and that never changes. What you do in your performance and the energy, it never changes regardless of where you are. So we're all just really happy to be a part of this incredible machine every year. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it has to be quite the undertaking. I'm sure there are people who are committed to working on this year round, but as far as the bands getting together and practicing, when does that usually start? I know you have shows coming up next week already. Have you guys been been at it for a couple months now, getting ready, or?
Well, basically, what happens with TSO is the second we finish the last tour, the management and production people start working on the following tour, because in order to get all the cities and buildings together for that, it's an incredibly huge undertaking. So that part of it, you know, that happens immediately. And then Paul eventually gets together with Al and Derek, our musical directors, and they make a decision on what the tour is going to be. We speak with the management and, you know, they decide, okay, this year we're going to do Lost Christmas Eve, or this year we're doing this. And once that decision is made, you know, the stage set gets built around that, and then the set list, obviously, for the first half of the show goes around the rock theater part, and then the second half is just, you know, it's a decision that's made with John, Paul, and Al, really, about what, you know, they feel that the fans are going to want to see for that specific year. And we get our set list sometime, you know, in the middle of the summer, and we practice the music on our own, and we arrive at our rehearsal space about 2 weeks before the tour starts, and we get into little rooms and we iron out all the songs and the tempos, and, you know, within a week we're on the big stage. And then the other stage, you know, we're at the East and West rehearse in the same building. So it's actually pretty incredible. You see two huge arena shows in one building, and wow. I'll be able to be on stage, on my stage, and they'll be programming the lights for the West Coast stage to our music. So I can actually watch the show while I'm playing it, which is a really fun thing to do. And then, you know, we play and rehearse our show and do our dress rehearsals, and we pack our stuff up and we fly to Youngstown, Ohio next week for our first show. And the West Coast band stays set up in the arena where they're starting, and the tour just rolls on from there. And this method is something that they decided to put in play probably, I think it was about 12, 13 years ago. Once we got, you know, into all arenas, it was just impossible for us to find a facility that could make this rehearsal place, you know, this situation happen, you know, to be able to go, okay, we're going to get this warehouse, we're going to rehearse this, and we're going to move it in arena. So eventually we started in the state of Florida rehearsing in an arena, just the one show, and the bands would swap who was actually on that stage, and then the East Coast would meet up with our show somewhere else across the country. So eventually we found a building that we could get every year, and we spend 2 weeks there, and everything goes there, and it's pretty massive, and it's fun, because we get to hang out and watch the other band play, and they get to watch us, and I get to see, you know, I'll watch Angus and Alan, I'll be like, oh wow, that spot looks really cool to stand in that song. And it's like I kind of learn for myself what would be a great, you know, stage placement by watching the other band, and vice versa. And it's like we all coordinate our shows, and then we fly away. And it's actually pretty sad, because, you know, you miss the people in the West Coast band when you leave, because, you know, they're all really good friends, and we just take off and they go on their tour. It's like, you know, I'd love to be able to be on stage with every one of them, but, you know, we have our places to go, and it's just a really big family. I mean, everybody here is so awesome to work with, from band and crew, and it's just it's a real pleasure to be a part of.
Hey, Chris, you know, talking about the preparations for the show, how about the physical preparations, like, say, for yourself, for instance? I mean, you're doing two shows a day. You know, what are your workout routines like with all, especially, you know, I've been front row for your shows with those hot lights, those flashlights going off. I'm sitting and I'm sweating. And you run around like a madman on stage. There's no other way to describe it. How do you physically get ready during the year for these shows as far as workouts?
I mean, seriously, I go to the gym 7 days a week if I can. I mean, I don't necessarily say force myself, but just I treat it like waking up and eating breakfast, you know, whether or not that's the time of day I do it or not. And if I don't make it to the gym, I have, you know, a step counter on me, and I always make sure that I do at least 10,000 steps a day. And, mm-hmm. you know, I just keep my body in shape. You know, I'm getting older, but I think I'm in better shape now than I was 10 years ago. And I you know, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to perform for these people, and I want to make sure that I'm able to do it at that level. I mean, there's nothing, I got to be honest with you, nothing prepares you for the tour like the first week of the tour. Like, I can sit there and do dress rehearsals, and I could try to, you know, do my shapes and moves and run and this and that and the other thing, but there's a different level of adrenaline and energy that you put out once you're actually on the stage and in front of people. And the first few shows, you wake up the next day and your neck hurts from maybe headbanging a little bit more, and your legs hurt from just digging into your stance a little bit heavier, you know, and then you really do run through the arena, and then it's just it's a physical thing that you can prepare for, but the first week you always gotta get over like a little bit of humps of your body just getting used to that. But once you're probably, I think it's like 3-4 days into it, you kind of just normal into the routine. And for me, I always feel incredibly good the last couple weeks of the tour. When you figure we would be the most exhausted, my body is so used to it, and I just have more. I tend to have more energy as the tour goes on.
Chris, do you guys take your own chefs and cooks on the road with you to make sure everybody gets, you know, nourished properly, since these are such strenuous shows to do, or do you rely on catering at the different arenas?
Oh, my God, no. We have both East Coast and West Coast. We have two different catering companies, and they're amazing. Right now, in rehearsal, we have the West Coast caterers here, and we meet up with ours when we get to Ohio, and these people really work hard, because not only do they feed us, which is over 100 people every day, they feed the local workers, which can be, you know, a total around like 300-400 meals a day. And that's like an 8-person crew. They travel with us. They have their own mobile kitchens. You know, if people have any special dietary needs, vegan, you know, gluten-free, whatever, they can get that. And we are, you know, this tour, the one thing is that is for sure, everybody out here is very well taken care of. You know, there's definitely, you know, this is a very large undertaking, and everybody's health is extremely important. And, you know, obviously eating correctly and having the ability to get really good meals is a big part of that. And our catering crews they're awesome, you know, and our production staff also provides the band and crew things that we need on our tour buses, as far as like, you know, breakfast and drinks you might need for, you know, when you're sleeping or when you wake up hungry in the middle of the night or whatever. We're very well taken care of out here. And like I said, our health is the most important thing, because if we're not healthy, we can't do the show. So that is something we definitely never have to worry about. You know, luckily for me, I'm on stage 5 hours a day, so I don't have to worry about the amount of food that's around. I usually lose a lot of weight on the tour, but you know, if I was out here and I didn't have my particular job, I would definitely be struggling with, oh my God, don't eat this, because it's amazing food. It's like being at a 5-star restaurant in a buffet form every day. It's awesome.
91.7 FM WNJR Washington, Pennsylvania. We're on the line right now with guitarist Chris Caffrey from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Hey, Chris, can you tell me a little bit about the philanthropical work that TSO has done? I see you guys have raised over $11 million for charities since TSO has been on the road. Can you tell us a little more about that, please?
Well, I mean, Paul has always been an extremely given person. I remember when I first started working with him, we would be walking down the street, and he would see a homeless person or something, and he would turn around, Chris, I'll be right back. And I'd watch him, like, then I could see it wasn't a dollar bill. You know, I could see hundreds of dollars going into this person's hand. And that's just the way Paul has been. I mean, Paul kind of feels like if he has $100 in his pocket and he only needs one of those dollars, that the other 99 can go to somebody else that needs it. And he's done that with TSO from the very first show. I remember he was like, Chris, well, this is what we're going to do. You go up there and tell everybody that $1 from each ticket sold is going to go to a different charity. Now, the very first tour, we had 7 shows at about 3,000 people a show. So the very first tour, we gave $20,000 away. You don't really think of that number as being incredible. But as the time has gone on, this year, we're going to go over actually 13, maybe 14 million people that we've seen in this. So the numbers is going over that. And then there's so much on the side that you don't see. Paul does a lot of independent work with the radio stations, where they'll get up on stage and none of us will know it, but the DJ will be like, oh, and Paul contributed an additional $35,000 to this or to that. So there's been, you know, millions and millions of dollars that aren't even seen on the stage that has gone back to the community. And that's something that's really special, because when you see the people, you know, a lot of times they'll come and they'll have representatives from the charity, but they'll also have the kids from the Children's Hospital. You'll have the veterans that come in. You'll have the people that have, you know, physical handicaps, and you'll watch where this money is going. And actually, the very first show we ever did with TSO was a performance at a Children's Hospital in New York at the Blythesdale Children's Hospital, and I remember that show. It was the very first time we ever played live under the name of Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and you'd watch these kids, you know, and I never felt so lucky in my life just to be breathing and walking. When you watch somebody that is in a wheelchair or bedridden, that is, incapacitated to the point where the simplest little things like, you know, grabbing a soda and drinking it is impossible to do for this person. You realize how fortunate you are. And that's why a lot of times when I watch what people complain about in this world, it really kind of gets frustrating because, you know, we're all very, very lucky that we have that to go with. And that's one thing through TSO that I've learned. It's like we're pretty fortunate to be able to give back. And that's one thing that we always like to do. And I'm always really happy that we do because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that need the help.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Chris, one last thing before we let you go. This is something you guys have done since the first time I saw you back in 99, and that's meeting with the fans after the show. And I can't tell you how many people who are not as, say, heavily involved or interested in music as myself or my family is, who go to your show and are just stunned that there's artists who want to meet you after the show. And
yeah, I mean, when we first started doing that, like I said, it was 3,000 seat theaters, and we would sit there for 10, 15 minutes and say hi to people, and then the crowd would clear. But as time went on, I mean, we actually had to put a limitation on a number of things people could get signed because once the word got out, we were there for 2.5 hours sometimes. The amount of people on the line has not gone down, but we have it in a formula now where we're able to make it so that the people that work at the arenas aren't there until 2 a.m. You know, they come out there and the security and the police come and we all sit at a table and we say hi to everybody. And it's great because, you know, I get a lot of people that even, you know, 18 years into the store, I'll see it this year. They'll be like, oh my God, this is my first time. And that's one thing that is crazy about TSO is many people have seen us. There's a lot of people that haven't. And it's amazing to know that the audience is still growing and we're still building. So, you know, anytime you would sit there and, you know, think for a minute that going out there and meeting people, it would be the same people, it's not true. I mean, we get a lot of people that come through the lines, and we have a lot of really super great fans that will, like, actually go see 10 shows, and we'll get to know them a little bit more personally than the other fans because they're in the lines every night. Then they know what you drink for soda or what you eat for candy, and these people will come through and they'll bring you gifts, and it's just so, I mean, it's like having, you know, your aunt or uncle show up eventually where these people just become a part of your life and you see them at the shows. And some of these people, like I said, I've seen them, you know, when they were kids, and I've seen them with their kids now, and it's just really, it's really crazy. I mean, we've established something with this band that I don't think any other band's ever going to do. We have a band-fan relationship as far as giving back to our fans that I don't think anybody else can do. And you know, I see what bands do, and most bands will charge you, you know, anywhere from $100 to $1,000 to do what we do for absolutely nothing. And it's like, you know, the fans paid the park, they paid for the ticket, they paid for the T-shirt, they paid for the CD, you know, they paid for their food when they're there. I don't want them to have to pay to say hello to me. You know, it's like, that's ridiculous. If you want to say hi to me, say hi. I'm lucky to be there. You know, it's like I don't ever want to sit there and think that I would need to charge somebody $1,000 to sit down and say hi to me. That's not something I think that we really believe in. Our fans give too much back to us for us to take that much from them.
And Chris, that goodwill goes so far for you as a band and for you as a person. And, you know, I know my family have been at your shows for 17, 18 straight years now. We'll be seeing you again in a few weeks in Pittsburgh. Chris Caffrey, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. We look forward to seeing Trans-Siberian Orchestra on the road starting on November 17th in Youngstown, Ohio.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it. And you guys got a big football game going on soon this weekend. It's going to be fun to watch. I grew up, you know, in New York where we didn't have, obviously, cable television when I was a kid. And, you know, there were no Giants yet, and the Jets were terrible. So you had to pick basically when I was a child between Dallas and Pittsburgh. It was like, who do you like? And I always loved the Steelers. That was my team when I was a little kid. So this weekend I'm going to have a big soft spot rooting for Big Ben to upset the Cowboys. Even though they look good this year, it's going to be fun to watch.
Yes, it is. Once again, everybody, thank you very much. Chris Caffrey, Trans-Siberian Orchestra. This is 91.7 FM WNJR, Washington, Pennsylvania.